Welcome to Deep Look, Ultiworld's weekly radio show about the current state of Ultimate. I'm the host and the editor of Ultiworld, Charlie Eisenhood. Joining me is Ultiworld senior editor Keith Rayner. And Keith, I know you say don't talk about the weather, but it's beautiful out there today. It's feeling like spring is coming, it's giving me more.
Maybe we can make an exception to like have some positive news, especially given, you know, both of us have been hit by the snow. Yes. We don't live that far from each other, but I tell you what, I'm damn sick of shoveling. I keep telling these people I'm just a Southern boy. Although did I tell you that we had a bunch of like neighborly help? That was kind of cool. Nice. Like our neighborhood was like all geared, like someone loaned me their snow, their like electric shovel, I guess, kind of thing, like snow blower, like a small snow blower. And then there's one guy who basically like walks and does the whole sidewalk with his snowblower on both sides of the street. I had a neighbor come over and plow. So that was kind of cool. That was like a benefit of the snow. My dog loves the snow too, but it's seriously annoying. So I'm glad to have some sun.
Yeah, I had to dig my car out from its parking spot on the street for the first time. It was not pleasant. I waited like three weeks to do it. And so I was basically having to shovel a giant block of ice, which is not great. So I living in an apartment building, you know, other people sweep the sidewalks and stuff. So I don't know. I don't have to deal with the homeowner thing.
Now, have you ever played Ultimate?
I have. I played a winter league in New York City, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 years ago now. And I swore I'd never do it again.
I don't think I've ever played in the snow. Like I've played when there's snow in the area, like it's been shoveled out of the way, but never like in the snow. But I don't know how. People can
it's a slog.
That. You know, you see these photos of people in the North Central playing in the snow, and I just like, no, it's I'm good. Yeah, I'll pass.
It's a total slog.
Hard pass.
If you want to have an escape to a warm place, if it's still cold or snowy wherever you are, check out the start of the disc golf season. Today is the beginning of the 2021 season professional tour. They're out. The pro players are out in Las Vegas for the Las Vegas Challenge, and it's an exciting time to pay attention to disc golf, Keith. You know, I talk about it on the show here from time to time. So first of all, there's some very good Ultimate players out in Las Vegas. You got Leah Sinigini, Ella Hansen, Alyssa Weatherford, all out playing, and they're all good. Like, they're really good. Ella Hansen just won a tournament. I think that she could be very competitive this weekend. Apparently, she's throwing like...
That would be really
she's
exciting.
She's like 350, 400 feet, which is...
I'll tell you
legit.
What. Being one throw Ella in disc golf would be way sweeter than being one throw Ella in Ultimate. Because if you're acing holes left and right, you're probably the best player there. So
and think about this. Just last night, news came out. Paul McBeth, probably the greatest player of all time. It's a debate between him and Ken Climo, a player from about 10, 15 years ago. Paul McBeth just signed a contract extension with Discraft. 10 years, $10 million. Let me repeat myself. 10 years, $10 million. So this is coming on the heels of him signing a 4-year million-dollar contract with Discraft 2 years ago that was the biggest contract ever in the sport at the time. And now this, you know, obviously goes way beyond that, you know, on an annual basis, four times as big. But of course, overall, locking down what really truly feels like professional sports money. You know, once you're in the double digits and millions, you know, that's like, that's real.
I mean, it felt that way with the first deal.
Right.
I remember us reacting to that. Like, that feels legit. I mean, a nine digit, you know, all those zeros, that's a lot of money, you know.
I've had some people text me and be like, we've all made a mistake. we should have played disc golf
and have been the best in the world at it. I mean, you know, if you're Jimmy Mickle and Cammy Groom, are you calling your agent right now?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like this is a perfect segue into what we're going to talk about in today's show is about radical rethinking of Ultimate. Now,
and how we can make way more money.
This is all about how do we get to the $10 million contract. But really, I think there's never been a more appropriate time, given that the sport has been shut down for what's going to be over a year when it's all said and done, to think to ourselves, okay, what exactly is the plan? How are we going to recover from this? Do we need to continue doing things the way that we've done them? It seems like perhaps the answer is no. So today, we're not going to try to do tinkering at the edges here. It's a chance to think big about ways that we could truly restructure the sport. And we've done this a little bit, Keith, you know, talking about the club division specifically. But I think this gives us a chance to really stretch the limits of what might be possible. We're going to do another show maybe next week or sometime soon about rule changes and sort of having a similar conversation about rule changes. But for today, we're going to focus more on off the field stuff, you know, structure of the divisions, how we get new people into the sport, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's jarring to see how much success disc golf is having compared to Ultimate, which is struggling so much right now. And obviously a lot of that's due to COVID. But I do think it's an opportunity to say, okay, what can we do different? So we put the call out in the subscriber Discord on Twitter as well. We're at DeepLookPod on Twitter. And we got a lot of responses. So we're going to look at what some people had to say online. And we also have some thoughts of our own. So, Keith, you want to pick one out here that that struck you?
Yeah. And what's the line from Inception? You mustn't be afraid to dream a little bigger, darling. And I'm not going to do the British accent, but... We gave people a little license to go crazy with this. You know, you don't necessarily have to be like, okay, this is an idea we think USAU is going to be like, maybe we'll consider that. Like, these are pretty drastic
changes. They should announce the Triple Crown Tour dates 6 weeks earlier than they do today.
Yeah. They should make it the Quadruple Crown Tour. And when I tweeted this, I kind of provided what I thought would be probably the most common example or one of the big two. I'll start with those. The example was that the mixed club season should be separated from the single gender club season. I think this is a take that a lot of people have. It is pretty drastic. We've talked about it on the show, including how it's pretty challenging to find space in the calendar. You do have to manipulate the calendar a bit. And one of the things that we end up, I think, talking about in that conversation is another one of the really popular ideas, which is that USAU should give up on single gender club altogether, let that be the domain of the professional leagues and the semi-pro leagues, and just manage mixed ultimate and youth competition or just altogether elite level club ultimate. I think those are the two most common. So like maybe they don't feel radical, but if you think about where we are now versus where those would take us, they're pretty radical changes. Any quick thoughts on those popular ideas?
Well, you know, we can talk about the mixed split in a bit. I think there's other ways of coming at that angle. Specifically, as it comes down to the pro leagues taking over, here's the big challenge with it, okay? So if you're thinking about what the problem would be, there's not enough cities that have teams. That's the big problem. What are the people in Denver supposed to do? There's no teams. So either those leagues would have to expand significantly into more markets so that you would have an opportunity for everybody to be playing, or, you know, there needs to be a lot more money involved because they would need to have be able to induce people to move from wherever they live to where their teams are. So I think that's the big challenge right now. But if we're thinking big picture, 100%, it makes no sense to have there be like a full season of semi-pro and then a club season with basically the same players playing together on what essentially look like the same teams and then having two separate, you know, scenarios. In my mind, the single game format truly is a breakthrough for the way that Ultimate should be played. It makes no sense to play 7 games in 2 days. It just doesn't. The only reason we do that is because of cost.
Except for fiscally. No, it really doesn't.
And I get it. But the thing is, like, you have organizations now that are nationwide. You know, for PUL, WUL, you have sort of two coasts, but those could easily merge. And you'd have the structure to let those organizations start to really push the spectator side of the game, right? The spectator focused side of the game. So much gets talked about with, you know, how do we get more people playing in the club divisions? And I think that's wrong. I think we need to completely stop thinking about that and recognize that the way most people are going to play Ultimate is going to be in their hometown, wherever they live, in a league or something locally. They're not going to want to join a team that flies across the country to compete. Sure, there will always be some percentage of people that want to do that, but for the most part, people want to play locally. So there's so much emphasis on elements of, you know, developing Ultimate that don't make sense. And that's one of them in my mind, right? College teams, growing college teams, it's obvious, right? Every college should have a team. We should push for that. Youth, we want every high school to have a team. We want every middle school to have a team. But club is always going to naturally be a small percentage of the overall playing population. So letting USA Ultimate stop focusing on club as a, sort of the main mechanism for adult participation in Ultimate, and we start focusing on how do we get people playing local leagues, to me, that's crucial. And one of the ways that that could happen is if USAU stops trying to run a million club tournaments over the summer. Why?
Well, the why is part of, you know, these are an incentive for these people to be USAU members. You've got to think that, you know, as you think of Ultimate as an industry, it's adult club players who probably spend the most money on Ultimate. And some of that is, to be fair, a lot of that does not go to USA Ultimate. A lot of that is spent on getting to and from tournaments, on equipment for tournaments, on fields and stuff like that. So USA Ultimate is indirectly benefiting from that, I guess. But obviously there's not a lot of incentive for people to continue to be members of USA Ultimate. Now, maybe they find some sort of arrangement with the leagues that, you know, there's some sort of profit sharing. But the other thing is, and this has been the main sticking point between USA Ultimate and the leagues, is that USA Ultimate doesn't want to concede of the vision, the control of the vision of what the future of Ultimate looks like. Because like it or not, the top level of Ultimate is always going to be the driving force for what other players, younger players, want to achieve. If this is the highest level of visibility of the sport, it's going to influence how other people perceive and think about the sport. And USAU doesn't want to concede control of what that vision looks like. And that's been was talked about at length when you look at USAU's relationship with the AUDL in particular, not wanting to have refs, not wanting to have a for-profit entity at the front of the forefront of Ultimate. And I think that people don't acknowledge that cost to USA Ultimate enough when having this conversation. There's a reason that USA Ultimate's been so staunchly opposed in a lot of ways to giving up that control to the AUDL. And it may be true that the benefits of being able to focus their resources on local leagues, on youth players, on college division is worth that cost. But I think USA Ultimate has been reticent to give up that control, to take that control away from the players. Like, our players, do players realize that's what they're proposing when they say, like, oh, we should have just the AUDL run club? Well, you know, then the AUDL and the PUL suddenly have an exorbitant amount of influence and power over how Ultimate develops, what the rules are, what players are, you know, put in a position of visibility and things like that. Like, is that something that we want? The AUDL is a for-profit entity, and I don't think all for-profit entities are evil or anything, but their incentives might not necessarily be the same alignment as what USA Ultimate's incentives are. Are people prepared for that, to lose player control for owner control?
Yeah, I hear you, but I do look at what's going on in disc golf, and I see a lot of opportunity for Ultimate to learn lessons. We have seen a progression of the Disc Golf Pro Tour taking more and more control of the professional side of the game. And the PDGA has started to let that go a little bit more. I will not be surprised if the PDGA stops running its version of elite tournaments. Because here's the thing. Club shouldn't go away. Okay? Regardless of what happens at the elite side, club should not go away. USA Ultimate should still have many club members. There should still be club tournaments all summer. The difference is that the absolute top players, the top 50 players in each city who are on the two teams, the men's team, the women's team, they compete in these semi-pro leagues, which hopefully can eventually become truly professional leagues. In my mind, that's a good thing. And so USA Ultimate can still set rules. And here's the thing. I want to see the conversations happen. I want USA Ultimate, leaders from the AUDL, leaders from the PUL, I want them all, Western Ultimate League, want them all in a room. WFDF, let's talk about the issues. Let's not have a phone call once a year where, you know, we have a little chat. No, we got to get in and get on the same page. That's the only way we're going to make any progress. And in my mind, like, player control doesn't have to go away. The way players have influence over the game is going to change over time anyway as the sport grows. So I think there's definitely a chance that, you know, thinking about how to restructure the financial operations of USAU can help lead to potential benefits to both parties. Because here's the thing, right? The semi-pro leagues, their goal is to get people to watch, to pay attention, to buy a ticket, to get invested in the stories of the game. And it's just simply not the same alignment for USA Ultimate. And that's okay. But that's why this split makes sense. It's what we're seeing in disc golf, and it's working.
And this kind of goes back to you know, a little bit of the mixed division stuff, but we talked about this when we talked about the potential to have a separate mixed season. This probably would enable the calendar to fit in a separate elite mixed season. And I know one of the suggestions that we got was from James in our Discord, where he said that if USAU partnered with the pro leagues could run the single gender elite division. They could fill in as the facsimile of that competition. And USA Ultimate could focus exclusively on elite mixed if they wanted to run elite level club. And if you separate the seasons, obviously you get the benefits of players being able to play in both, getting the top level players playing together in a bunch of different environments, being able to showcase them in multiple ways. So it does kind of tie together these ideas.
Yeah. I mean, we could go on this for the whole episode, so I want to move away so we don't just get stuck on it.
Yeah. What else have you heard that you found?
Really okay. So here's a fun one. The beginning of the season, this is from Patch, teams sign something that declares whether they want to try to make nationals or not. And teams that do are required to use the same jerseys for 5 years. Apparel companies charge more, can sell them at higher prices, potentially increasing cash flow across the sport, as in like charging $100 a jersey. It's radical. What do you think, Keith?
I'm not sure I quite see the big benefit here. I do think this is a little bit of what some of the restrictions around the Triple Crown Tour aimed for. You know, I think that the Triple Crown Tour was something where they were trying to build on a near league-like structure at the top of Elite Club Ultimate. You know, having rosters have to remain the same and team names remain the same. You know, having some sort of branding element, having teams be relegated and brought into higher tiers. Like, I think that was the goal, and I don't think the execution has really come off that way. We do have some consistent teams, but it isn't like teams have really taken advantage or are enabled unlock some sort of marketing. And this plan works for Patch if there's money coming from outside of the teams. If, you know, in that 5-year window that your team wants to pick to be elite, we'll say, as a team that's trying to make nationals, you know, are you able to sell those jerseys to fans? Because otherwise, it's just players paying jersey companies and jersey companies giving a product or whatnot. Like, the arrangement quite doesn't make sense to me. You also, like, we don't, there are a lot of teams that don't have a 5-year window or whatnot. Sure. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty tough outside of your really, really top tier club teams. I mean, there are teams that you might have put in this category 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that don't exist anymore, right? You know, High Five, gone. You know what I mean? Like, so Ultimate doesn't have a place in a lot of ways for teams to exist over this long a window or be in the same shape for this long a window. People are too transitive, I think, in Ultimate as it is. There isn't like an ownership organization or something that's consistent throughout those player movements.
So I
think there's a few too many hurdles for me for this one.
Think about some of the things that we see in other sports. And I think the core of this makes sense to me in that you want to have brands. You want to have team brands. One of the biggest problems in Club Ultimate is that teams, by and large, this does not apply to every single one of them, but by and large, simply do not care about making like an online identity or allowing people to become fans of their team. There's not very much effort. Most teams don't have a website. Most teams, it's difficult to find their jersey online, to buy a fan jersey. Here's my radical idea in this vein. USA Ultimate, so teams make semis, right? So move away from the pro league concept. This is pure, we're thinking about club as it exists today. If you make semis in the previous season, you get to go to the US Open, right? You have to go to the US Open, I should say. But instead of just saying that you have to go to the US Open, USA Ultimate should foot the bill. They should pay for those teams to go to the US Open. And as a way of incentivizing that, you say, we'll pay for your whole trip and cover your hotels and your flights and whatever else, but we expect these things in return. You have to come and do a photo shoot. We want all your players to do a photo shoot so we can get like high quality images. You have to get and maintain a website. You have to make your jerseys available on the internet in some way. Like, you could put a bunch of things in place and in return give the team $10,000 in value. And again, this is really to be focused on the absolute top teams, the ones that really drive the interest in the competitive side of the sport for people who want to watch at home. And so I'd love to see USA Ultimate creating a real incentive for not only playing well, but then following up and having teams committing to being fan friendly. Because right now it's an absolute joke. It's an absolute joke. I mean, USA Ultimate lets teams write all kinds of wacky bullshit in the like documentation for the tournament. Like, we got to move beyond that kind of stuff in my mind if we want to be like a serious sport where, and I know a lot of people just don't want that, but I'm not one of them.
Not a new chain lighting, huh?
I mean, it's funny for us insiders, you know? Like, it's not like I think there's a time and a place for that stuff, but I'm not sure that it's in the like national championship rule book thing or guidebook.
There are a lot of people who I think have I think that the common perception has shifted more away from this kind of like, we should button up and, you know, the hashtag legitimacy stuff. And I think there's a lot of people who are like, I think there's a lot of value in keep Ultimate weird. That's the phrase I should have said. Just keep Ultimate weird. You know, people like all that stuff, and finding the balance between them is really difficult. But the core of your idea, like helping teams become brands, incentivizing them so that people can actually be fans, is, I think, a good idea. I don't know exactly how to do that, because I think one of the barriers for teams, you know, why they don't have these things is that, A, they don't see a lot of benefit in it for them. They don't see a lot of growth opportunity to potentially get to the point where their fan base is helped subsidizing costs, creating more accessibility for the team, or just the positive energy you get from having an interaction with fans. You know, there's a reason that athletes like having fans, right? So beyond just the money aspect. I think there's a real lack of fans in Ultimate, but I think that the semi-pro leagues have shown that there is a desire, that it's not inherent in Ultimate that people can't be fans. We don't necessarily have a great spectator format, but that's been something that we'll probably talk more about during this conversation. All that said, I think it would be good for USAU to try and find ways to help teams brand themselves better. I don't know if throwing money at it is necessarily the answer, because I don't know if members are going to be like, wow, I'm really glad that my money is helping subsidize the trips of these elite players. I don't know if that's exactly what people are going to say.
USAU's got to think
that's kind
bigger.
Of the trick of being a membership organization.
USAU's got to think bigger. They got to be trying to go out there and get a sponsor. We need a title sponsor for the USA Ultimate National Championships, you know, presented by Acura. I don't know. I don't know why that's the company I came up with.
And it's probably a lot easier to do that when you have this, like, you know, look, here are the athletes. Here are the stars of the game. Here are the best programs. Here are their brands. Here are their fan bases. Like, those are things I think that add a lot of marketability. But this, I think, would take a long time to work. This would take years, I think, of building this up to get there. And if you have a rotating cast of teams, if you don't end up with those same semifinals teams, then I think it's going to be even harder.
But consider this. How much money are they spending on the ESPN deal? Hundreds of thousands a year, right?
Yeah.
Divert some of that money to paying for the teams to go to the U.S. Open. I mean, we have to create incentive structures for growth in general. So this is very specifically focused on the top end, where you're thinking about how do we make this appealing and accessible to a broader audience. I would rather the money go to that than to the Beach of Dreams. You know, like, think about ways of creating, because, I mean, people want to get a Sockeye jersey. They want to get a Brute Squad jersey. And it's not that those teams
don't
make that stuff accessible. It's just, it's hard to get. I think they do.
Yeah, but do people want that, or do like 25 people want that?
We haven't tried.
The numbers need to be a lot bigger in order to make this like truly a win proposition.
Fair. I mean, we haven't even tried.
That's true.
What's another one you like?
All right. So there's a lot of ideas. You know, we're talking about different places to focus on and potentially market in Ultimate. So this is an idea from Pavel, and this one was pretty out there. So he says, USAU funding/time investments for Masters, Grandmasters, Beach, National teams, and all club events that are not Nationals should drop to zero. And all that funding should be shifted to content creation and paid position for state youth coordinators. Basically, marketing to youth and state coordinator money. Or... He also proposed a mixed semi-professional league to compete with or stand beside the ADLWL and PUL. Just looking at that first idea, I mean, that's we're talking radical. That's pretty radical. Like, USAU basically focuses on college, club nationals, youth competition, and marketing to youth players. It would be great to see, you know, we got some other ideas about reducing the reliance on volunteers. It would be great to see youth coordinators compensated and, you know, high qualified people being put in those positions and able to be successful. And I think a lot of people agree that growing the youth is one of the best paths to success for Ultimate, for long-term sustainable growth. I don't know if marketing to them on, as he suggests, TikTok or Twitch or Instagram is the tool that we need to rely on, but it certainly could be a big part of it. We know that USAU hasn't always been the strongest marketing organization.
So, yeah, I mean, this is definitely radical to say. I mean, the Masters players, I can hear them screaming right now. The thing is, right now, USAU tries to be everything to everyone. And I don't think it works. I don't think it works. And the connectivity between the local organizations that do things like actually operate youth leagues and USA Ultimate is not good in many places. The biggest cities with the biggest scenes that are doing the most to create youth playing opportunities, for example, typically are unaffiliated with USAU. And so again, incentive structures. What are we doing here? The idea of paying smart people to be state youth coordinators, whose job it is, who's paid, not a volunteer position, not a $2,000 stipend. We're talking about a full-time job to focus on growing youth with metrics in place that that show success. And if you don't meet them, you get fired. If we did that, I think it would transform Youth Ultimate in 10 years. So I don't really know that I agree that we need to cut off everything else, but there's a lot of centralized work happening at USA Ultimate that needs to decentralize. We have to get more people locally empowered to do this work. And so if that means giving money to the existing organizations that already have the infrastructure, you know, your Disc NY, your PADA, you name it, give them money, right? Right now, USAU tries to soak up money from those places instead of giving them money. What we want is to try to give them as much money as possible. We don't need dollars going to the central national organization. They need some amount of money, but most of the growth is happening in the local places. So again, the kernel of truth when what Pavel has to say here, I think is very correct. I think figuring out how to truly amp up youth opportunities is going to be absolutely crucial in particularly the next couple of years as we try to come out of the pandemic.
Should we hit the ESPN contract like a pinata here? Is this like, you know, the whole like top down, let's get on ESPN and that'll lead to explosive growth idea? Should we just like be like, why are we soaking money into this when this, if you took the ESPN contract and broke it down into hiring state youth coordinators, we might actually be seeing explosive growth? Like, is that the move?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to think about like where the money in the budget is and how much money is it really. I don't know how much they spend on that. It's a significant chunk of money, but it's also not, you know, it's not paying for 50 youth state coordinators.
It's not, but what if you did, you know, regional coordinators who were full time?
Sure.
8 to 10 people could be getting a lot done.
You ready for, here's my really, really, truly radical idea. We need to charge more money for everything, including at the youth level.
Yeah, you're definitely, this is what, this one's out there. Sell me on this before the pitchfork mob grabbed you.
We see a lot today, people talking about how we need to reduce costs, that it's too expensive, that there's barriers to entry. And there is truth to that. For, you know, low income students who are, you know, in high school, we should find ways either through grants or a USAU program or whatever it may be to keep costs at a minimum for them. But for everybody else, we don't charge enough. We don't charge enough. One of the problems that we have is there's no money. We need money in order to do the things that we want to do. Local DISC organizations need capital to hire staff to run youth tournaments, youth leagues, adult programming, the whole situation. And what do? Is we constantly think about how can we do this at the minimum absolute cost? How do we make it? But so many people in Ultimate could and would pay more than we're charging right now. When people complain about a $25 per person fee to play at a tournament, I really just don't want to hear it anymore. I think if we just tripled prices across the board, it would do a lot for Ultimate. I don't think I think people would expect, well, if you do that, you know, you're going to hurt demand, because now it's more expensive. But I really don't think that's going to happen. I think that mostly people would continue to play, and then all of a sudden you would have more money available to do the things that you want to do to make it more accessible for the people who truly need the financial help.
So you think there's a market inefficiency here, that the value of Ultimate is especially like elite and competitive Ultimate, is way higher than what we're actually charging for it, that people would pay a lot more in order to play, and that would enable us to redistribute from the mostly well-off, college-educated, degree-holding folks in Ultimate to the people that can't get access, if you increase the price barrier,
extent,
we can get them over.
But I'm not calling this a pure like redistribution plan. I'm saying we need to
it's not
capital
just
for the things that we want to do. Everybody thinks we want to grow Youth Ultimate, but most people are saying grow Youth Ultimate by making it less expensive. I'm saying grow Youth Ultimate by making it more expensive and subsidize the people who need the money. But right now, tournaments are too cheap. Tournaments are just simply too cheap. And it doesn't just have to be on the youth side of things, but like camps and clinics and everything else should get more expensive. I mean, what, like, 10 years ago, how much did it cost to go to an Ultimate tournament?
I couldn't even tell you anymore.
But like, take a shot at it. A regular tournament.
For a person for a team? I don't know. $350.
How much is it now?
$500.
If that.
$450.
If we that. Haven't even adjusted for inflation. Really? I mean, I'm
pulling these numbers out
of thin air. I would have said the same numbers. I'll give you a style example. High school national invite. We've raised the price over time because we wanted to have a better tournament experience. And the only way to do that was to have teams pay more money. And we still fill the tournament every year. And like, that's an extreme example. It's kind of like a very high end elite tournament for the top teams. But at the end of the day, the hindrance is not the money that you pay for the tournament. It's the travel costs and everything else. So I think, you know, league in New York, I don't know, it costs like $60 for a season. Charge me $150. I'm going to play. And then use that money to do marketing and get more people involved.
And I guess the investment idea here is that in the long term, as the sport grows, you become more attractive to sponsors and outside money rather than money from players. And that will either lead to additional growth or start to reduce the cost that players have to pay. So,
and if you want to, if
I guess that's the idea,
prize money for tournaments, that's cool too.
Sure. I've got a pretty crazy one. This is one of the wildest ideas I think I've heard for Ultimate. This came from Ariel in our Discord. And this is an idea that a couple other people shared, which is that USAU relies on volunteers too much. So what can we do about that? Here's an idea that's inspired by modern monetary theory.
Okay.
To participate in sectionals, each team must pay X ulti bucks is what he called it. We'll just use that term. Ulti bucks on top of the tourney fee. Teams earn ulti bucks by volunteering hours for USA Ultimate. So instead of relying on assorted volunteers to help out, teams do the volunteering themselves. They earn whatever the currency is, ulti bucks in this situation, by doing that. You know, maybe you earn ulti bucks also by coaching, by becoming a certified observer, all these sorts of things. And, you know, individuals unaffiliated with a team can sell their ulti bucks to teams for whatever price the market bears. Think of high school volunteers taking stats at YCCs. Now they can get money for their efforts paid for by teams when they sell their ulti bucks to the teams. And then to go to regionals, it would cost even more ulti bucks. He uses the example two times. Nationals would be four times ulti bucks. So you'd have to work your way up within the community by doing things for the benefit of the community in order to be able to compete at higher and higher levels. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to ask you what you think first.
Okay. So this has some. I've thought about this kind of idea before, not necessarily with the currency, but. And I think I've talked about this on the pod, but the idea that every Nationals club team should be required to have a certified observer on the roster, encourage people to become certified observers, even talking about doing that at the college level so that every college team has someone who's like at least knows the rules so you can confirm someone on this team knows the dang rules. So doing that sort of thing or getting people to volunteer, I think is a great idea. And this is an actual way to accomplish that. Do I think that players would complain about this? Yes, but your team can earn the ulti bucks rather than an individual. So, you know, I could see some friction between certain teams. You know, so-and-so is not earning any ulti bucks for us or whatnot. But like, I like the idea that this also builds in that people from outside of teams can benefit the teams. You know, maybe you get people who are donating to teams. Maybe that potentially, benefits that the haves over the have-nots, you know, big teams who have fan bases or parents or whatever, alumni who can do the work for them. But I think that there's a lot to be said for this idea. I mean, I'm having trouble finding a major flaw here. Am I missing some big gaping flaw in this idea?
Honest to God, I don't really think you are. I think this is exactly what I'm talking about when I say we need to have the incentive structures aligned better. This is creating the incentives that we want. And you can price things differently, and you can even change it year to year based on the needs of the organization and of the sport. So, I think if you coach a middle school or a high school team, that should be worth a bunch. That should be worth a ton versus, I don't know, doing phone banking for USA Ultimate or something. That would like be worth less. But you can dynamically price things so that you're creating incentives for certain things to happen. If you need more observers,
or
encouraging people to be observers by like adding in a bonus in Ulti Bucks for that particular, you know, for going to this observer clinic, could help create that incentive. Right now,
and even you're giving USAU the power to basically print their own currency, so to speak. So if you needed, like, let's say USAU wants to get coaches for historically black colleges and universities, Give those university club teams Ulti Bucks that they can use to hire a coach. Right now, all of a sudden, you have an attractive coaching opportunity that maybe didn't exist before, or to any sort of group that needs, you feel like could use assistance. You want to develop Ultimate in a specific area or for an organization. You know, you have this kind of lever to pull to help incentivize players, especially elite competitive players who have a lot of experience, to blend their skills there. I mean, I've talked about this many times, but I remember being on the Vision Tour and saying during the Vision Tour meeting, like, look, we're all in this room, a lot of coaches and elite players. And where do we all go to coach? The same places that everybody else coaches. And You end up with, you know, coaching staffs of 7 or 8 elite players. Why aren't those players going to the places that really need them rather than to the place that they're really comfortable? Because nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to go coach some team that is going to go 0-4 at sectionals when they could go coach a team that's going to be competing at nationals. It's not as fun, but that's the kind of sacrifice you might have to make if we actually want to grow the sport. This incentivizes teams to do that. This provides that incentive structure.
And, you know, if you want to, there should be some exchange rate for bucks to US dollars that allows people, teams to buy out of it if they don't want to deal with the volunteering. But it should be, you know, 10-1 or something. I don't know. Like, it should cost you some real money. But, you know, if somebody's like wealthy and they feel that they would be, you know, they prefer to, and they're busy and they want to use their money instead of their time, that's still really helpful. So allow that to happen. You can still have the sort of the general market happening as well, right? If somebody else wants to volunteer in your name and you pay them money, maybe you can get that at less than the official exchange rate. But look, again, we have to create incentives. Because right now, one of the big problems is, what is the incentive to coach? What is the incentive to be a tournament director? You can't make any money. And that's a big incentive. And we can only rely so much on sort of like the good of people's heart. We want to foster an environment where eventually it becomes a profitable endeavor to be a tournament organizer. And we haven't created the incentives. So same thing.
I'm picturing like professional volunteers in Ultimate who just like volunteer and then they sell their Ulti Bucks and like that's their life.
if there's a market for it, why not?
Are we gonna have an Ulti World Ulti Bucks marketplace, you know?
we take a 3% fee as an intermediary.
And we'll help find the buyers and the sellers. We'll connect them.
No, I think it's a pretty cool idea.
Ulti Bucks to the moon, baby.
Oh, no. here's one from Sarah on Twitter. Automatic waiver of membership costs for youth players at Title I schools. Title I schools, I assume, is low-income schools.
That's my interpretation.
Yeah, 100%. So even though I was just saying before how we need to charge more, the corollary of that is that we need to make it very easy for low-income people to start playing. And if you know, a $35 a year membership is a burden, get it out of the way, right? We need to think big picture, long-term. How do we get people involved? It's the same problem I have with USA Ultimate and coaching. It's a burden to become a coach. We should make it easy to become a coach. We should make it frictionless to become a coach.
100% agree. I mean, is there anything more agreed upon in Ultimate than that we need to grow Youth Ultimate? Is that like literally the most agreed upon thing?
Who is going
to
disagree with that? The only disagreement comes in the way
Grandmasters.
What did you say?
The Grandmasters players.
Even they, Keith. Yeah, but I mean, I think the question is, you know, how do you grow it? I feel like an aggressive campaign. So here's another idea I have. You ready for this one? Yeah. Set aside $200,000 a year to pay out in grants of, let's say, $2,000 a pop to just straight up give to people who coach at schools that pay less than a certain amount or are pure volunteer positions. So if you coach a new team and the school doesn't pay you very much or it pays you nothing, you can apply to USA Ultimate. You can say, I'm coaching this brand new team, and you get $2,000. You know, choose the numbers that you want. Create financial incentives for people to coach. We have to find ways to start new teams at schools. We have to give people a reason to go out of their way to figure out all of the hurdles that it does take to start new teams.
Do I need to ask where this money comes from, or is this another hit the ESPN piano?
Okay. In the budget.
I like to know, because it's really easy to be like, well, we should put more money into this. It's like when we put out all club teams and someone's like, well, you should put so-and-so on the team. Well, that's fine, but who are you going to take off? You know, all these things come with a trade-off. I think you know that, but I think it's good to spell it out for people.
Yeah. I think already the organization has had to become more lean because of COVID and the resulting drop in revenue. So do we... How many staff do they need to have?
At USA Ultimate?
I think there's too many people.
Honestly, probably more than they have right now.
Maybe long term, but I think we need to push money into local places and not centralize it as much as possible.
What? Interesting, because yeah, I guess it. The other way to look at it would be that, like, USA Ultimate could have more employees that are working with local organizations, sure, rather than less employees, and you're giving money into the organizations. I don't know which one's better that of those two options, but worth noting, Sarah, the youth chair also said, and if I'm dreaming, an end to the practice of using affiliate status as a stick for youth club eligibility. Yeah. I know that idea feels pretty unpopular.
I don't even think that's radical. I think that's obvious.
No, I don't. I wouldn't put it in that category.
It's in the same scenario as, you know, that's funneling money away from organizations towards USAU, and that we should not be doing that.
So we got an idea from Mags, who's one of the editors at Ulti World, and they said that USAU should dip a toe into high level indoor, maybe a late winter indoor nationals. Kind of following the beach nationals model, something that makes it appealing to elite level players. I'm actually going to kind of like take this idea and make it even more radical. What if like 4-on-4 or 5-on-5 were the most elite competition in Ultimate? What if we pushed our focus harder at maybe not necessarily indoor specifically? You know, maybe this is beach. Maybe it's on grass. But what if we were focusing more of our energy on highlighting and making competitive opportunities for a small-sided game because of the benefits of that type of game in the long term for marketability? You know, one of the challenges with Ultimate and, for example, the dream for the Olympics is that there are a lot of people, right? I mean, you've talked a bunch about disc golf and looking at disc golf. One of the things about disc golf is that it's individuals.
True.
So rather than having to pay Macbeth $10 million, imagine if you were sharing that money among 30 people or whatever is on an Ultimate team. You now also create more accessibility because you don't need a team of 25 elite level players to compete. You need 10 players and maybe not even that. You get more star power, right? Your best players get to play a lot and be very involved. Does it hurt, you know, role players? Yes. It'll de-emphasize those players. But I think if this were the most highest level of Ultimate, I think you would see that type of player less common. I think players would be more well-rounded. You just would see less players develop as role players. They would become more players would be successful because of their ability to do a little bit of everything than they would because they're good at one or two things. So I think that, you know, I can imagine a world in which, in the same way beach volleyball is really popular, 4-on-4 beach ultimate is really popular. And it could be a lot easier for us to find field space, for us to find players, for us to create teams, you know, more teams, more entities. That could all help us, I think, potentially market the sport in the long term. Do I love 7-on-7 Field Ultimate? Of course I do. Sure. And I probably would suck a lot at this mini version of the game. I hate playing mini for my skill set. It's just not, it doesn't work for me. So this is not a thing for me, but I could see mini being more marketable than Ultimate if you found the right field dimension so that the game continued to be exciting and spectator
friendly. Well, I like what Mags had to say about trying to create a really nice like stage for semis and finals of this indoor concept that looks really good and is the right scale to maintain that really sort of that intense packed crowd feel, even if you don't have that many people.
Yeah, apologies to Mags for me just like
no, I think it's
totally
good.
Taking their idea and ripping it up to do my own.
We're trying to be radical today. I'm sort of surprised that we haven't seen the attempt to do indoor stuff. I mean, to me, it seems like a very obvious kind of thing to do next year or whenever.
Well, we haven't seen it in the U.S.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean, because it's obviously very popular in Canada. It's very popular in Europe. Obviously, there's parts of the country where it probably wouldn't be as big of a thing. But in the northern half of the United States, indoor would be a real thing. I think, you know, there's some cost factors there, but again, charge more money. But I love the idea of having like a really intense indoor championship. You know, Europe has this. They were live streaming indoors in February of 2020 before COVID.
And there were fans there.
There were fans there. So I like the concept. I think the thing about 7-on-7, one of the things that would really help, if we think about trying to reduce roster sizes over time, we have to get away from like big scale tournaments and get into more either single game formats or smaller, you know, 3 games over 2 days kind of situations. Because then you don't have to have 27. You only need 20 or 18 or 16. But again, I think it's tinkering at the edges. Like, let me ask you this.
A little bit. I think my idea is a lot more radical to just be like, let's go all in. Let's push the chips in on the table on 4-on-4.
What should we do to get more adults playing Ultimate?
Sorry, I thought that was a rhetorical
question for you
that was leading you into your answer.
No, it was a question for you.
I mean, the general answer and mine it as well is get kids playing Ultimate and then they turn into adults function of how
but let's say that's not an
timeline.
Option.
But more adults playing Ultimate, meaning you have to make Ultimate exciting. And it's one of those things, I can't remember the word for this, but they use it when referring to technology, where the more people are engaging with something, the more popular the item is. And the example is the phone. Like a telephone's not that useful if only 1 in 10 of your friends has one, but it becomes a necessity when 9 out of your 10 friends has one.
Yeah,
that type of technology, I feel like that idea kind of applies to Ultimate. It's a lot more fun when all your friends are playing it and talking mm-hmm. about it and engaged with it. So like, how do you get through that barrier to the point where, you know, it is a conversational topic? And I think that's the idea behind the visibility, the ESPN contracts, the pro league model. You know, how do we make the game exciting so that people are talking about it? Maybe you do it through, I don't know, some sort of esports type of model. Maybe that's a path that, you know, is probably more crowded than ever now, but certainly feels a lot more achievable than like trying to compete with the Major League Baseball and NFLs of the world. Which I think has not been the most successful path. So maybe we need to diverge. Do you have something in mind?
Here's my idea. I want to get the people. Identify the cities in the world that have the biggest summer leagues, adult summer leagues, mm-hmm. and get the people who run those leagues, you know, the 20 people or whatever that run those leagues, get them in a room and ask them what they're doing. Let's learn from what's working. Why does Vancouver have such an amazing Ultimate Frisbee scene? What's so different about Vancouver than Seattle? Seattle has a good scene, but their summer league doesn't even come close to Vancouver's. Vancouver, it's amazing. They have an entire like beginner boot camp type thing that's like 8 weeks, and it's just for beginners to learn how to play. And then in the future, they find a team and they compete in one of like 25 divisions. We're talking thousands of people. Remember, we had Brian Gissel on. He was talking about the Summer League.
Mm-hmm.
Madison, Wisconsin. Why are they so successful at creating teams there? Sure, you know, Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin has good Ultimate, but there's got to be more than that. Is it the size of the city? Is it what they're doing in the programming? What is working there? What is working in Montreal? I bet Atlanta has a really good Summer League scene. Is that true?
It does, but not on the scale of what we're talking about with these.
I want to understand, what are they doing that's working? How is their outreach bringing new people into the game? I think a lot of times...
I thought for a second you were going to propose the Summer League Championships.
Oh, well, somebody gave that idea, so go for it.
Oh, did they? I don't even think I saw that.
I saw this one on Twitter. I'll just paraphrase. I don't want to go find the tweet, but it was like, have a national Summer League Championship. So all of the Summer League teams that win their top division then fly somewhere and play in the Summer League Championships.
I love that idea right now. I don't know how it doesn't devolve, though. I mean, it's eventually club, right? Or, like, Summer Leagues aren't all run the same way. So it's like, how do you start, like, how do you, one of the things about Summer Leagues in a lot of cases is that players are ranked and that you try and distribute them fairly, although that's not true across all leagues. Some leagues are just sign up and come play with your friends. So some leagues are all draft leagues. True. Like, if you're not on the same page, how do you manage that part?
Have multiple divisions.
What's the keep team? What if leagues, like in your ranking league, how do other leagues know that your rankings in your league are fair? How do you know that one league is the Denver League is like, oh, we're just going to rank all our league club players fives, put them all on the same team and go win the Summer League Club Championship or whatever accolades come with that.
I mean, I think that, I don't know, you'd have to have some sort of system to deal with that, but.
Yeah, I mean, so eventually you're just Club Ultimate, right?
I mean, but it's like purely local qualifying to then compete in one big Summer League Championship. I mean, I think it's different.
I feel like, though, I like the idea, but you need to, like, this is almost like, the idea here is kind of pro-am, right?
Yeah.
Like, we want a championship that's accessible to more normal players and less people who are, you know, trying to do 10,000 hours in Ultimate. Is that the idea?
I mean, I don't even really know what the idea is. I think it's just a fake concept.
It's half-baked, but that's okay. This is the episode for half-baked ideas, I think.
Alex Rubin, reporter at UltiWorld, he says high school varsity status should be a priority. I don't care who puts in the work or money to make it happen, but it would do wonders for recruitment to have a real youth sports organization like the high school state apparatus involved. I mean, I think that this should be, like, before we were talking about having paid state youth coordinators, every one of those people's job, part of their job description that they spend 10% of their time on or something, is figuring out how to start to make inroads towards that. Because having Ultimate being put into schools and being in some cases required to be put into schools would change the game. It would absolutely change the game.
Well, so here's my thoughts on this. One, I think this is a lot harder than it sounds. There's a reason that there are so few of really even close attempts to get Ultimate on the varsity slate with state high school organizations. It is very challenging. And now he said the top priority. So, I mean, this could literally mean, like, forget the Olympic dream. Like, let's turn our entire focus to the varsity dream or whatnot. But this goes back to what I talked about earlier with the AUDL and the PUL and the WUL and USA Ultimate. If you give Ultimate to the state high school organizations, you are giving up a lot of control. A lot of control. And that'll have impacts on who's playing the game, how they're playing it, who's benefiting from it, how winners are set. Like, there's a lot of give and take there to try and get Ultimate into state high schools. And you may not, everybody may not like the decisions that come from that. It's the same thing. You know, I used to be a big proponent way back in the beginning of the show. Was that like 6-7 years ago when I first got on the show? Of, we are way too focused on making elite club Ultimate our main focus we should be focusing on the brands that exist within College Ultimate. But over the years, I've grown to see the challenges that come with being a part of the NCAA. Sure. There are a ton of benefits, but a lot of them are monetary. I mean, that is the big one, is monetary. So I think that there's a lot of costs, and all those costs exist with these high school organizations, not to mention that there's not a national one. So, you know, you're really state by state at that point. There are a ton of benefits, 100%. Yeah. Getting a major entity behind organizing Youth Ultimate will definitely lead to growth. It's a question of our, is it the growth that we want? Because I think people are a little too casual.
I got to say, I'm sick of hearing that. And I don't just mean from you. I just mean in general. You know, everyone's so worried about what kind of growth we're going to have. Well, we need to worry about the growth problems when we have them. We are not growing. The sport isn't growing. And now we're in the COVID crisis. We need to try something new. We need to try something new. And it's not like a Ultimate Frisbee becoming a varsity sport would somehow completely change the complexion of what Ultimate Frisbee is. I just don't think that's true. Sure. Are there going to be more restrictions on, you know, how many games you can play in a day at a tournament? Probably. But that's probably a good thing.
For example, would there be refs? Would refs become a part of Ultimate?
I don't think you'd need to do that. I mean, we don't obviously have much data on this, but Vermont isn't requiring them to have refs. The game has functioned for 50 years without refs. At the youth level, I think it's actually very appealing. I think it could be a selling point. I mean, you hear that from USA Ultimate all the time. But the varsity thing, yeah, are you going to have to play by the rules of the state a little bit more? Are there going to be more restrictions? Are you going to have top teams unable to fly to some out-of-state tournament to compete at, you know, high school national invite? Yeah, probably. But over time, those kinds of things will figure themselves out. I would much rather have the problem of being like, wow, we got to find coaches for these 50 schools that don't have one right now, than the current situation where our youth population is getting smaller. It's insane to worry about these growth issues when we're not growing at all. Everyone's like, oh, we got to make sure that we grow the right way. Well, how are we growing? Show me the numbers. I'm watching boom, you know, we watch lacrosse.
Kaboom. I think those people would say that growing the wrong way is bad, and they don't want that. So, like,
but how are you?
Okay, I'm gonna take that perspective. I'm wearing that hat right now. The point isn't that we are growing right now in the right way. It's that I don't want to grow in the wrong way at all. So if we grow. If we get an additional 10,000 youth players, but none of them have been taught anything about spirit of the game, or it means that we can't have an inclusive community with, any sort of policies that we've worked so hard to get to, there's not equitable enforcement or something like that for those within the community. Like, if that's the cost that I have to pay to get those extra 10,000 players, I don't want them. Like, I would rather have the growth be the right type of growth than have any growth at all.
But I think we need to push a lot harder for actually growing. And here's the thing. It's not like if you just made Ultimate a varsity sport that all of a sudden it's going to become football. It's Ultimate Frisbee, right? We're not a scholarship sport in NCAA. We're not going to suddenly be overrun by all the cool kids who are, you know, jerks. It's still going to attract players who are attracted to Ultimate Frisbee today. It's just that there's going to be a team at their school now instead of no team. I mean, I really think that the kind of like, it's like almost fear mongering in my mind about the growth of Youth Ultimate. Like, the cities that have done a really good job of this, of really generating lots of growth, are some of the most diverse and, best looking groups of, like, communities in the country. Seattle, Minnesota. I mean, Minneapolis is doing an amazing job. Seattle's doing an amazing job. And the thing that has made Seattle so successful is that the schools, they put it in middle schools back in the 2000s. It became a requirement that public schools have Ultimate teams in middle schools. And that has changed everything. because that's where diversity comes from. Because now you have a team at the inner city school that's Title I, and who is the population of that school? It's not the suburban high school kids at the private schools. So I think that people assume that there's going to be all these negatives, when really I think that the positives would vastly outweigh the negatives, and that we need to aggressively pursue things like NCAA, like Olympics, like varsity sanctioning, and that, you know, the potential downsides to those issues, you know, can be mitigated or are completely erased as long as we're smart about how we approach it. But instead, people are actively fighting against growing at all. And that to me is crazy.
For the most part, I agree. I think as long as we are, you know, not signing our souls away to the devil, so to speak, you know, and trying to make these kinds of arrangements, then these are a lot of bridges that we can cross when we come to them. And we don't need to kind of throw out the baby with the bathwater. We can be mindful of how we grow, because there is a lot of benefit, and those benefits are strong. And a lot of them achieve some of the goals that we've set as a community for increasing accessibility and inclusiveness in our community and trying to diversify it. These are a lot of the tools that help us do that, as well as potentially give us a long-term on-ramp for players to grow in the youth level and all the benefits that we think will come with growth of the sport. So for the most part, I agree with you. I may be a little bit more, you know, cautious about how we grow, but I think that people are overly cautious and protective. And part of that comes from just, you know, we've been a small community and people like to preserve that. They want to protect it. And I can appreciate that, but sometimes we're our own worst enemy in that regard.
One last one here from, this is from Jason on Twitter. Reform/abolish the Triple Crown Tour summer series and re-promote regional tournament culture. I don't even think that's radical. I think that should happen.
Yeah, I feel like that's gained a lot of steam. Yeah.
I mean, we're going to get, if there's Ultimate this summer, Club Ultimate this summer, we're going to get a test drive, because we're going to see regional events, and they're going to, you know, we're going to have I'm hoping, you know, we have a sweet Boston invite and we have a sweet Terminus, and those kind of like tent pole tournaments really have a resurgence.
Absolutely. And we talked about this in an earlier episode during the year. Well, last year, I guess we've changed years. Maybe there's something to like the connecting club and summer and league idea, like club and league, like a club would represent like the best of your league kind of thing that ties in here to like it, to enhance the appeal of regional ultimate, but replacing the Triple Crown Tour kind of thing. So maybe there's some ideas here that we can work with.
I like it. All right, well, I'm sure we're going to get lots of ideas now that we've had this conversation. So hit us up, deeplook@ultiworld.com, @deeplookpod on Twitter. You can also drop a comment on our YouTube channel, because now the show is on YouTube. If you haven't checked it out already, go check it out. And for Keith Rayner, I'm Charlie Eisenhood, saying so long, and we'll talk to you next week right here on Deep Look.